Marijuana is now legal in Maine, but you're not allowed to sell it or buy it. Maine voters approved a ballot initiative last fall that legalized the recreational use of marijuana. After the vote, a special legislative committee came together to craft regulations governing how pot could be bought and sold. After months of work, the panelists put forth a comprehensive bill that this morning was vetoed by Governor Paul LePage. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on Maine Calling, we'll take a closer look at what's being proposed under the new bill, and we'll also explore the practical and political reasons why it's taking so long to come up with rules that can be agreed upon, even among those, including Governor LePage, who oppose the legalization of marijuana. We'll also explore what happens next if the new bill fails to survive the governor's veto. First, this news. And from the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. Last November, Maine voters approved the legalization of marijuana. The commercial sale of the drug was delayed until a special legislative panel could set rules for implementation. For the past year, we've had a system in limbo as marijuana buyers and sellers wait for regulations to be put in place, or in some cases, finding ways to skirt the law. Today, we'll learn about the proposed regulations and the stumbling blocks that remain. With me in the studio, Representative Teresa Peirce. She's a Democrat from Falmouth, chairs the Joint Select Committee on Marijuana Legalization Implementation. And Senator Mark Dion is also with us. He's a Democrat representing Senate District 28. He is also on the committee. And as always, we want to hear from you. What are your questions about how marijuana will be used and sold here in Maine? What sort of regulations do you think are important? Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to both of you. And we do have a little breaking news here this morning, just a few minutes ago. Governor LePage, perhaps not surprising to some, vetoed the measure that we're talking about today. And he explained to our Mal Leary that he did so because marijuana is still not legal under federal law.
The Trump administration has not said they won't enforce federal law. The Obama administration did. So if I sign that bill, I am violating my oath of office, and I can't do that. So I'm vetoing on that grounds, in addition to the statistics that have come out of Colorado and Washington State on the increased deaths on highways and increased crime relative to drugs, and therefore I've done that. And that's another reason.
All right. There is explaining his reason. Teresa Peirce, what's your reaction, I guess, first of all?
Well, I'm disappointed, obviously. I think that we put together a strong committee that worked in a bipartisan manner to come up with a comprehensive, thoughtful bill that protects public health, protects our kids and our communities. And I think it's disappointing that the veto has come through, but I think it's something that we've gotten used to in this administration. He tends to veto a lot of things, and we have to get good information out there so that we can move forward and try to override that veto.
Senator Mark Dion?
I'm not surprised. He has sent a number of signals that he intended to veto this bill, and it's unfortunate because the administration's participation in crafting this legislation was almost non-existent. I'm also kind of curious as to his assertion around what Washington is going to do. I think what Washington will do is take into account that there are 28 states that have some type of legal relationship with cannabis for its citizens. That federalism is an experiment in democracy, and it's his own party that has advanced ideas of states' rights and a state's capacity to develop strategies that make sense for its citizens. And unfortunately, he's elected not to exercise the leadership necessary in our relationship with Washington on this issue.
And we'll talk more about this and get the reaction of some of the GOP players involved in this as they join the show a little bit later on. But this is such an involved story and a bit of a complicated winding tale. So I thought we would start out at the very beginning. And that, of course, is the last November when voters went to the polls, Teresa Peirce, and voted to legalize marijuana. Now, this was a big bill. They had to. There was a lot to read in there. But the bottom line was that by a narrow, razor-thin margin, it was approved. But it didn't take effect immediately, right? And there was an effort by the legislature to, quote-unquote, improve the version that voters passed.
Well, certainly, you're absolutely right. The referendum passed by razor-slim margin. And I think that it's important with referendums to remember that they're not written in law and they're not written in statute. There were some contradictions and some problems with the referendum as it was written. The Attorney General brought that forward. And I think the legislature felt that it was time that we get a committee together to work on this in a comprehensive way, clean up those issues that might happen while keeping the spirit of the referendum alive and well, which is the legalization of adult use marijuana. We did that, I think, very, very well. I think when something passes by that small of a margin, you really want to listen to the concerns people had. They're worried about their communities. They're worried about safety. They're worried about their kids. And so we put things in this bill that helped maybe comfort people in some way around that. It's a bill that gives full local control. Towns and communities have the right to have whatever they want, what type of they want in their communities, what type of in the industry. And that's very important. And we tightened up that language. We do a lot around youth prevention and law enforcement training, which is not in the referendum language. We did a lot around taxation and trying to figure out how to pay for this and make it work. We also wanted to make sure that there was an entrepreneurial spirit, that we have a people in Maine being able to participate in the market as well. So I think we did a lot of things that improved the referendum language.
Were there things that were in the referendum that you absolutely also had to target around age, for example, or I think there were references to drive-through purchases, things like that?
Yeah, we put a number of things in here that prohibit drive-through. We prohibit internet sales. Again, these are for protection of youth in our communities. We worked a lot on making sure that the language was clear that you have to be over 21 to use this. We wanted to make sure that local control was at its core. We did this similar to alcohol, where communities need to opt in to participate. Just all in very much in the structure of what Maine is like and who we are. And we listened to that other side and tried to reflect that in the bill.
So now as we come to today and the governor's vetoed this, obviously, Mark Dion, you want that veto to be overridden and move forward. But what happens if there aren't the votes next week or whenever to do that? Do we go then back to the original bill passed by the voters?
Well, I think those who propose that this bill should go forward, we're doing yeoman's work right now trying to educate legislators one by one as to what this bill means. And one of the lessons we've learned is some who oppose this because their home districts opposed it in the original election believe that if they kill this bill, they in essence recriminalize marijuana, and that's not true. So what will happen is the personal use and cultivation of marijuana will go into effect, and then you're going to incentivize people who were prepared to enter a legal market to once again return to a black market to sell the commodity. Marijuana has been among us for decades. It's not going to go away since the governor vetoed a legal draft to make it lawful. We're incentivizing people to remain or conduct themselves as criminals, and that's unfortunate.
Let's bring in Ken Fredette. He's a Republican from Newport and the House Republican leader. Representative Fredette, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
All right, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in today. I know there's a lot going on. First of all, I guess people, we've just heard the news that the governor has vetoed the marijuana legislation. Would you vote to overturn that, or will you be siding with the governor?
Now, I'll be voting to sustain the veto, and I'll also be working with our caucus members on the special session day that we had. There were 53 people that voted against the bill, and I'll be working with those 53 people to work to sustain the veto, in part because there's the process. I mean, you know, we were called back into special session to work on two specific bills. One of them was an appropriations bill, which was just a minor fix, and the other ones was a food sovereignty bill that the federal government had an issue with. So those two things are the reason why we were called back into special session. And then we had an 82-page regulatory scheme bill put in front of us hours before session, days before session, and said, oh, by the way, let's go ahead and vote on this. And I agree with Senator Dion. The folks on the committee have done great work. But, you know, it's just one of those deals where I don't think the full bodies had a chance to look at this. They're not comfortable with it. Folks in my caucus, many of them are very uncomfortable with the tax scheme, which essentially creates the beginning of a local sales tax option. And there's other pieces of this, let alone just the sheer size of it, that people are uncomfortable with. And so I don't think the world is going to stop if the bill gets sustained. I think what will happen is that I had a bill that we had put forward to continue the moratorium that's currently in place on February 1, 2018. And whether the other parties like it or not, we're going to have to extend that moratorium to continue to figure out how to deal with the implementation of this law.
So your vision would be the governor vetoes it. There aren't the votes. You're hoping to override that. So we go back to the original bill passed by the voters in January, and when the moratorium expires in February, you're hoping that people will come together and put this off even further.
Yeah, I mean, we actually had a vote. We actually had a bill on that as a governor's bill that was in the House. And of course, you know, politics being politics, people don't want to, you know, be adults and say, oh, yeah, there's probably a recognition here that as adults, we recognize February 1, this thing is not ready to go live. You know, if you want to ask Senator Dion, a good friend of mine, if he believes that the rules are going to be ready to go, even if this bill passes as an override of the governor's veto, the rules will not be ready to go in place to go live on February 1. So I'd like to just get a little dose of reality and really look at how we can fix this. We'll be back in session in 60 days. And so when everybody's there, we can sit down and figure out what's the path forward.
Well, you just asked him, so we'll let him answer.
How you doing, Ken?
I'm doing well. How are you? So we should be in court.
That's right. We should be in court. And my only regret about this initiative is I won't have an opportunity to debate you on the floor of the House and try to convince some of your colleagues to make the right decision. But in terms of your observation about February 1st, you're correct. I think rulemaking is going to take some time to bring force to the statute, but we're dealing with an economy, and I think it's important that the bill pass to send a signal to that economy and its participants that we are moving in the right direction, that we do encourage lawful behavior on their part, and we're providing a path forward. And the bill also addresses components not having to do necessarily with licensing issues, but with the direction that municipalities may take. And I think with the passage of the bill, then the municipalities, where all the power will lie in terms of making final determinations around cultivation and retail operations, they have some framework that they can work with. I mean, frankly, it is a complex bill, but just because a book is long doesn't mean it can't be read. And that's the issue here today.
And there's so much in here that we could look at.
But let me just say, though, I mean, so a very good friend of mine, Senator Dion, I also, though, don't think that it means just because it's long and it's complex doesn't mean you vote for it and then read it later. I think that that's one of the issues that we're having.
Yeah, I'd like to jump in here about that because we've been in our committee's been working since late February on this. We've been very open and transparent. I think at the end of almost every one of our meetings, we had public comment on what we were talking about, trying to come to some comprehensive decisions. In addition, when the bill was drafted over the summer, our committee worked long and good hours and were committed in earnest to trying to hear everyone and get this right. And once we did draft the bill, we provided a draft of that over 6 weeks ago. So there's been language out there for people to look at if they've been interested in that. We met again. We had a public hearing, another 5 hours. Then we have reached out individually, sent the bill in advance to everyone in the legislature for opportunity to look at it prior to that special session. So I don't want people to think that this was dropped on people's laps at the 11th hour for them to vote on. I think that that's really, really not the case at all.
So because there's so much in here, I wonder if we could just take a look at a couple of tangibles here that are of issue, for example, to Representative Fredette. You mentioned the tax system under this. What would be taxed and where it would go? What are your primary issues under this measure with regard to the tax part?
Well, I mean, I can be corrected. My understanding is there's two taxes in this. One is a 10% tax, and then there's another 10% tax, which stays locally. Is that correct, Senator Dione?
Well, there's a tax that's applied at the cultivation point, the excise tax, and there's a sales tax.
Yeah.
Part of that, and I think Leader Fredette referred to it earlier, is the plan is that from the sales tax collected at the retail point of service, a percentage of that would be returned to the municipality to mitigate their costs associated with policing and providing oversight to the retail.
So you go into a retail shop and buy some
10%.
10%
at the point of purchase sale, and then a 5% of that total collected then would go back to the municipality. In addition, at the excise tax level, that's a 10% as well, and a portion of that 5% would also go back to those communities that have cultivation facilities to any cost they may incur.
And those are not only to pay for law enforcement, but also, I'm guessing, as an incentive for towns to play, or no?
I think some will characterize it as an incentive, and I don't think that's necessarily an uninformed perspective. We're asking municipalities to take a risk. Whether it's real or not, we're not sure. We never are. And this is a way to minimize that decision on their part.
Representative Ken Fredette, some might look at this and say the opposition simply wants to put it off because they don't like the idea of legalizing marijuana. How do you respond to that? Would there be a bill that you could live with that would create regulations for the sale and taxation of marijuana?
Well, look, I think there's a realization that the voters voted for this, and even though 50.2% versus 49.8% voted, it's slightly in favor of this, it is law, and I think as lawmakers, we need to go through the process and recognize the intent of the voters and follow through on that. And I think, it also means that we need to do it in a responsible way. And I think that's really what the conversation amongst many people are, is that they are just trying to do this in a responsible way. And part of that means is that they want to understand it. They want to make sure that the rules are going to be in place before this thing gets going, and that we have a system that's it's fair, but also one that has enforcement. Now, I think part of the concern is in terms of just the cultivation. It's going to be widespread cultivation. How are we going to enforce that? How is it going to be when you have kids in home? I mean, I know, like, when you're old like me, 50 years old, and your mom and dad smoke, you're smoking in the house. The kids are inhaling that. So what if you have an infant in the house, a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old? And two or three people are smoking pot. I mean, there are consequences to that. And I think we need to, again, look at the big picture. Nobody's, I think, trying to kill this. I think there are some people that are simply opposed to it. They see it as a gateway drug to heroin or other drugs. But I think we have a responsibility as legislators to implement a system consistent with the intent of the voters. And we're going to do that, and we're going to do it in a responsible way. But I think we need to make sure we do it in a timely fashion, and make sure we try to get as much of it right as we can when we do it.
All right, we're up against a break. Any response to?
Absolutely. I think one of the key things that he pointed out here is education of people who are using it and education of our kids. And I'm not sure if Representative Fredette is familiar, but 6% of the total revenue will go to those campaigns so that people understand how to use it responsibly and how to protect their kids from it. We also have a lot of packaging information in this bill and a lot of ways that we're going to protect kids through tamper-proof packaging, et cetera, that just isn't in the referendum. And the longer we wait, the longer that we're exposed, these communities and our kids, to these dangerous things.
There's a lot that Representative Fredette brought up in that monologue, but I want to talk about individual responsibility.
All right. I'll tell you what. We will get to that, but I'm going to let Representative Fredette go. We'll take a break. I know he's got business up there. Representative Ken Fredette, thanks for joining us and calling in today. Appreciate it.
Great to talk to you too, Senator Dion and the Representative. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
That's a House Majority, a GOP leader, Ken Fredette. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, more of your questions and comments. The number 800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Goodwill Northern New England, with a 10-year goal of helping 10,000 households build stable lives through work. GoodwillNNE.org.
Undocumented immigrants in southern Texas face a daily dilemma.
People who live here in Laredo are really living in an island. You can't go anywhere north, south, east, west without passing through some kind of checkpoint.
What that means for a woman who needs to see a doctor 150 miles away, plus more reaction to the Republican tax plan this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered weekday evenings from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. And this evening at 8:30 on Maine Public Television, following Washington Week in Review, join Jennifer Rooks for a discussion about two of the referendum questions on next week's ballot, Casino Question 1 and Medicaid Question 2. Tuesday is Election Day around the state, and this Your Vote 2017 program will provide information and different viewpoints on the two referendum questions. That's tonight at 8:30 with a rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 5 on Maine Public Television.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, setting the rules for legalized marijuana in Maine. With me in studio, Senator Mark Dion, Democrat from District 28, and Representative Teresa Peirce, Democrat representing Falmouth. Both of them are on the legislative committee that formulated the regulations on marijuana. We invite you to join the conversation. The number 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now is Senator Roger Cates. He's the Republican representing District 15. He also chairs the Joint Select Committee on Marijuana Legalization Implementation, co-chairs, we should say. Senator Cates, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Keith, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be on with two of my colleagues who are both, by the way, Democrats. I happen to be a Republican, and just want to emphasize that this is should not be a partisan issue, and certainly it wasn't on the committee.
Earlier, we got their reaction to the governor's veto of the bill earlier this morning, and I'd like to get yours now, if we could.
Thanks. And I didn't hear theirs, but, you know, to me, you know, this is more than a day late and a dollar short. I mean, we've been, as Senator Dion and Representative Peirce, I'm sure, have told you, committee's been working for 9 months on this. We have solicited input from the governor, from his administration. And unlike every other governor in every other state where this has passed, this governor has chosen to sit on the sidelines. And I think that's really too bad. We're all supposed to be on the same team. We all want to get this right. I mean, I know that there are people who were opposed to the passage of this bill, of this legislation, and citizens' referendum. And frankly, I voted against it myself. But once it became the law of the state, I think our obligation is to try to make it work and protect our kids and our communities. And that's certainly what we tried to do on the committee, Keith.
So the governor cited one of the reasons that he was vetoing this was a constitutional issue, that under federal law, you know, marijuana is not allowed under federal law, and therefore he couldn't go along with this. Is there any legal or other reasoning to that, in your view?
Well, I don't think there's a constitutional issue here. I am well aware of the federal law, but as I'm sure that others have pointed out, we've had a medical marijuana system alive and well in our state for about 15 years now. And the federal government has decided to take a hands-off attitude toward it, as long as the states are very careful in making sure that it doesn't get improperly diverted. And at least until now, it's been the same reaction here with respect to recreational marijuana in other states. So could the federal government crack down on this? Yeah, they could, and maybe they will. But until they do, again, I just think it's our responsibility to do this in a well-regulated way. It is legal.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, the voters have made it legal. You know, the ship has sailed, and we've got to do our job.
You've cited Colorado's governor, John Hickenlooper, as someone that our governor and some of your fellow legislators should look to as an example. What did he do in Colorado that serves, in your view, as a model for Maine?
Well, I think as your other guests there will tell you, we looked at Colorado, we looked at Washington, we looked at the state of Oregon, tried to take the best from each of those states. And I think that a number of key things we drew from them were, first of all, we got to do everything we can to protect public health and safety. So by putting a proceeds of these portion of the taxes toward making sure that we are educating our kids in a way that will hopefully keep them from using marijuana, and putting a portion of the taxes toward law enforcement to help train additional drug recognition officers to keep our roads safe, and by putting in place a well-licensed system that gives first opportunities here to Maine citizens. I think those are some of the key lessons we learned from our discussions with officials from those other places.
All right, let me ask you before you go just a practical political question here. Do you think there will be enough votes to override the governor's veto?
Yeah, I think we're all very optimistic we're going to be able to override the veto. Again, there should be no part of this which is partisan in nature. And again, from our perspective, or at least from mine, the choice that our colleagues have is to vote for a well-regulated system here, which licenses this, which taxes this appropriately, and which directs people to a legal and safe market. Or the other choice is to sustain the veto, and then we're really back into an arena where it's a legal drug, but we've got no good regulated system to sell it or to use it in. That's back into the chaos of the Wild West, and I hope that enough of our colleagues will understand that. You know, will we change this law going forward? You bet we will. It's going to look far different, I'm sure, in 5 years or 10 years, but this is a good start.
All right, Senator Roger Cates, co-chair of the committee with an incredibly long name that crafted this bill the governor has vetoed today. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me.
Mark Dionne, you wanted to respond, I think, to some of what Ken Fredette had said in what you characterized as his monologue before we took that call.
I'll
give you the opportunity.
I apologize to my colleague if he took offense to that characterization, because from time to time I've been guilty of similar speaking tactics. But I think. Woven in his argument is what I call horrible hypotheticals, that we can't vote for this because we can't be assured to a certainty that bad things won't occur. And I don't think we impose that burden on any other type of industry, whether it's cigarettes, alcohol, or, as we look about us today, electricity. We try to get the best out of the participants as possible. And when it comes to parenting and access to controlled substances, I think there's individual responsibility that has to come into play. And the committee did its best to respect the right of parents to be parents and provide them community support so they can be effective in guiding their children to positive outcomes. And the one thing about the committee that I will say, to build on what Senator Cates and Representative Peirce have talked about, this truly wasn't a bipartisan effort. I never sensed it was a Democrat or Republican debate on the horseshoe. Instead, it was a consensus, a compromise among various perspectives. We had colleagues who came to the table opposed. We had colleagues that were very strong advocates in the proposition. And we built a statute that recognizes that practical political reality, that half of our citizens were not in favor of this initiative. And inside their protests were legitimate questions that had to be answered. I kind of took some solace from the fact that Scott Gangan, one of the opponents, a substance abuse professional, said, look, the bill doesn't look that bad. There's more to be done, but this is a very good start.
Let's bring some folks in here who have been very patient. We'll go first to Steve in Orono. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks. So I think it's interesting that the state of Maine still saying they want to have a legal program when it's illegal federally. But as far as the cash, so like there isn't a bank in the state of Maine that will take money from a drug deal, when it does become legal to open your retail store. And so how does the state monitor taxes due, or are they really, you know, he who counts the cash first, right? Are they really tallying up the real cash sales they have, or is it half of what they're selling? And how does the municipalities, because there's the federal government has basically said there isn't a bank. There isn't a banking company in this state that said that they will take money from these transactions. So how do you monitor and control it is beyond me. And then one other second thing is the educational piece. State employees, state police, Maine State National Guard people, none of these folks, I hope that's in the education, they could lose their job if they're randomly drug tested. And I think drug testing, at least, that market will take off because companies don't want to know if their employees are driving a forklift or driving a truck and if they're consuming recreational marijuana. I think it's a littered bill with potholes, and I agree, and that's a good part. I agree with the governor. This bill is federally approved. We shouldn't be doing it. I think it's dangerous, and I think it's going to be costly as well.
Thank you, Steve. Let's address your concerns. Go ahead, Deborah.
So thanks, Steve, for calling in. I'm going to talk about the banking. I might leave it to the good senator to talk about the law enforcement since that was his profession. But we did actually meet with a number of credit unions that participate in our medical marijuana market in the state as it is. And I think that they were willing to come on board with that if we had because the medical field was highly regulated, they understood who they were dealing with. And they expressed to us that if we created a highly structured, regulated market where they had clear guidelines, that they would be willing to participate at some level through the credit union program. So I think the banking is an issue. It's no question. We did heard that a lot from Colorado as well. But there are people who do participate in this market in a banking way. It certainly is cash-driven to some extent as well. But I think the further we move down the line, the more highly structured, the more highly regulated we are, the more appetite that our local credit unions will certainly want to participate in this at some level.
I guess just a quick footnote. It's not a whole truth that banks won't do business. There is a federal regulation that requires they complete what's called a SARS report, suspicious activity report. And they're basically asserting to the federal government that the dollars that are involved in this transaction came from a legal enterprise. And the banks, because many of them work across state lines, have elected not to participate. They're not confident yet that they can exercise appropriate due diligence in making that assurance. Credit unions tend to be more local-based enterprises, and therefore they see some value in trying to solicit this business community as potential shareholders in their catchment as far as customers are concerned. And as far as capturing all the cash, all I can think of is when I was a footman, I had a little corner store in my district. And that owner would ring up certain purchases. Somebody would come in and buy a sandwich or a six-pack of beer, and he'd ring it up. And while I was sitting there eating my sandwich, some customers would come in and they would pay, and he would open up a cigar box and put the money in there. And I once asked him, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, the ring-up is for Governor McKernan. The box is for me." And I think that's endemic in cash businesses. As a government, we're not quite sure if we ever got all the income, taxable income, that we should have received. But I think we're going to make that effort with marijuana. And in the medicinal side, it appears our tallies meet our projections. So we hope to do the same on the adult use market.
And I'm not sure I'm capturing the second part of Steve's question, but it was about certain occupations being tested for marijuana. I assume those, whether they're federal employees or not, if that's the rule for employment,
that doesn't change.
We did nothing to circumvent the right of an employer to manage his or her workforce
as they saw fit. Nothing at all to do.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. A word first, though, about Monday's show, we'll talk about Medicare open enrollment, which is underway until December 7th. We'll answer your questions about Medicare and let you know where to find help. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainpublic.org. Tweet us or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Mid-Maine Restoration, specializing in steeple and tower restoration throughout Maine and New Hampshire for over 25 years. Maine-steeplejacks.com.
There's a story told about northern states and the efforts to abolish slavery and help slaves flee the South.
Wonderful white people and evil slave catchers. And in those stories, the slave loses out.
So much of African-American history is on the cutting room floor.
On Next, from the New England News Collaborative, a nuanced history of the Underground Railroad. And how do we respond after another big storm? Hope you can join us.
Coming up at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, we'll talk about the question of voter fraud. How big a problem is it? Or is it a problem at all?
Do we know how much there is? No, because it's almost impossible to detect and catch. Once you put the ballot in the box, it's anonymous.
The question of voter fraud. That's next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
That's tomorrow afternoon at 2 and Sunday evening at 11 on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, regulating marijuana use in Maine. Joining me today, Representative Teresa Peirce and Senator Mark Dion, both legislators on the Bipartisan Committee on Marijuana Implementation. Join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to David Boyer, the campaign manager, who was the campaign manager of Yes on One last fall. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure. You wanted to weigh in on a few things here. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, we're, you know, obviously disappointed that the governor has gone back on his commitment to support marijuana legalization if done through referendum, which he said back in 2014 when he was running for re-election. So disappointed in that and really calling on the legislature to override his veto. This is a compromise bill, like it's been pointed out on this segment. We don't like everything in this bill either. We don't like that social clubs are delayed for an additional year, but we still support it on balance because it's moving in the right direction. It's progress, and it's going to give adults a place to purchase marijuana in a regulated market where we check ID. I don't know why the governor would want to support the unregulated, untested market where drug dealers are the ones in charge, not the state, not licensed businesses. So we're going to work really hard for Monday. And it's just so disappointing that you have the governor and Representative Fredette. They didn't show up at this process the last 7 months. And for them to call it rushed is just baloney. This is the same process every bill in the legislature goes through, except it was months longer and it heard from more stakeholders and experts. We had the marijuana czar from Colorado come in. And so to call it rushed is just not true. And this is really unprecedented. If you look at the seven other states that have since made marijuana legal, none of the governors have obstructed in such a way, including Republican Charlie Baker in Massachusetts. So we're going from last to dead last, and that's a shame because it's the illicit market that benefits, and it's the good faith actors that don't benefit and that are harmed, and it's the adults that will continue to have to go to the unregulated market instead of a safe, legal place like Maine voters wanted. And I think the real other tragedy of this is the trust that's lost from Maine voters that has been eroded in this whole process.
All right, David Boyer, thanks very much. He was the campaign manager of Yes on One. We also got a tweet from Scott Gagner with smart approaches to marijuana in Maine, who writes, half of voters said no, pointing out, again, the thin margin of victory in that vote, and want strongest rules and regs to protect kids and public health. Will MLI work with us to fix those remaining issues?
Absolutely. I think Senator Cates said it in his comments as well, that this is an ongoing process. What we're trying to do is set a table, get going on this so that we can address issues that may come up in the future. We may need to tweak or change certain items that aren't working well or didn't do what we intended them to do. I mean, I think first and foremost, we want to protect our kids and our communities. And if there are things that we need to change in here to do that, we certainly will address those things.
Let's go to Angelo in Newcastle. Hi, Angelo.
Hi, how are you, Keith? Great show. And I just wanted to say, to me, there's a larger question. And I think the larger question is, and I have to commend the committee doing their work in such an excellent manner, in a well-thought manner. But to me, the larger question is, why is it that it seems every time there is a referendum and it is passed by the voters, there is an attempt to thwart the voters' wishes whether it's a referendum dealing with ranked choice voting or other referendums that the governor held up.
School funding was the other one, I think.
So my question is, you know, that to me is the greater issue, and I was really interested in knowing what you just thought about that. That seems like at every turn, there's an attempt to thwart the will of the people. I mean, half the people both voted for this federal administration, but that does, you know, I mean, that. So that argument to me is almost furious.
But Angelo, are you pointing to the governor's veto as an example of that, or the creation by the legislature of this committee, the rewriting of?
The committee is to be commended. They've worked hard. My concern is the greater issue of the various referendum, whether it is the legalization referendum or the ranked choice referendum, there's always an attempt to stall or drag out the will of the people. That's what I've seen.
You know, Angelo, thanks for calling. You know, the governor in his veto message refers to his taking an oath to the Constitution. And I think Representative Peirce and I and the members of the committee took an oath to the people of Maine that we would carry out their will as best we could. And we've done that. And for any kind of tactic that would erode our work or turn empty the promise of this bill is unfortunate. It shouldn't be done. I mean, this was passed by referendum. We cannot ignore that. And at the same time, we've tried to maintain a position of respect with the opponents that they had something of value to say. And it's just unfortunate that one person with a pen could put an end to that.
Let's go to Deirdre in Falmouth. Hi, Deirdre.
Hi, I'd like to say that I'd like, first of all, Mark Dion's longtime support of both the medicinal marijuana and his effort to legalize marijuana in the state. I'd like to thank him for that. And also I'd like to say that, you know, alcohol is one of the most regulated aspects of our economy. Having sold beer and been in businesses that sold hard liquor, you know, it is so regulated by all the taxes always collected. We can take that that template and have it be the marijuana template, and we will collect more money than, you know, the state could use. I recently was in Colorado, and you know, their economy is booming because of their legalization of marijuana. So, in any case, the idea that that somehow we wouldn't be able to find the money, we certainly would be able to. And I particularly was interested in Mark's comment about the storekeeper who, put on one hand, you know, has a box for himself and a box for the state. That wouldn't be the case with legalized marijuana. Right now, none of that money is being taxed. And that's all I have to say. And thank you very much for the legislature for taking this on. Hopefully they'll overturn.
Thank you, Deirdre. Email from Trevor. Legalizing marijuana is only going to incarcerate young teens needlessly and cause chaos among our hopefuls of the future. Obviously, reflecting again, there's a division here about the opinion of this. But I want to bring in one more call, then I'll let you respond, Mark. Let's go to Bob in New Vineyard. Hi, Bob.
Oh, hi. I wanted to address the comment you introduced this with, that the referendum passed by a razor-thin margin. That I knew a lot of people who were against this were against the referendum because they thought it threatened the hard work they had put into building a medical marijuana system. And that that they were pro-pot but against this particular referendum. And then our people voted against it because they thought that the corporations were going to move in and take over, that the bill wasn't protecting the small growers against that.
That's true. There were these political constituencies. You're correct. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think in terms of the big groups coming in and taking over Maine, we've structured our tiering system to make sure that we can give Mainers an advantage. You have to be a resident of Maine for 2 years before you can get a license, and that gives those people that advantage. Something we heard about a lot in Colorado, they did, I think big companies came in pretty quickly because they didn't do anything about that. They're trying to rectify that now. In relation to the medical marijuana side, you know, our charge was really the adult use. And we stayed very clear of the medical marijuana field, and we don't want to impinge anything with this on patients or their ability to get the medicine that they need or the caregivers to take care of those people. And so I think that in the future, I'm sure there are crossover ways that we might be able to work with the medical field in terms of testing or some other avenues. We should look to that in the future. But right now, those are sort of two separate entities moving forward.
Yeah, but Bob, I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you want to finish?
I appreciate what you're doing. I think you're doing a good job on this. And my comment was just about addressing the idea that it was a razor-thin victory. And that, you know, I'm a Vietnam vet. I think marijuana helped me keep me sane. I haven't smoked it for years. I was looking forward to it being illegal for a number of different reasons, for the safety of the public and for my friends in Central America that are affected by it. They've asked us to do something about this. And so good luck going forward with this. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Just about a minute left. Let's see. Let's go to Pete in Brunswick. Pete, we only have really a few seconds left, but we'll let you fit it in.
Well, I was hoping to make a comment. These people in support in sustaining the veto by Governor LePage, I think they're doing so more based on their personal beliefs rather than what is prevalent. I also wanted to comment about the caller, Steve, and how he said how uncomfortable he thought children would be around marijuana. And I feel the same way about alcohol. You know, there's alcohol in homes with children there as well. And I think that with regulation and all that, I think it would all even out fairly to the same.
All right, Pete, thanks for coming. I'll let you guys have the last word, obviously, because you're here with me. But I guess what would you say if you were going to be able to try to, you know, convince your colleagues to try to override this veto? What would you say to them?
Listen, I'm a parent. When my daughters were in high school, they said, "Dad, you and your friends, my colleagues in the police and sheriff's department, have made it difficult for us to get alcohol. We can't buy it without ID. You're watching every retail outlet. But if you want drugs, we can find it." I want to take that story away from families moving forward.
And I think if we don't override this veto, we've heard loud and clear from the agencies that they will not start rulemaking until we do something. And we've heard that from the towns and communities. And so the sooner that we pass good legislation, the sooner rulemaking can get going, and we can protect our communities and our citizens and our youth. To leave the current law in statute as it is irresponsible. We have a job to do. We're paid to do it. We ought to do it. I think we've given a lot of time for people to read the bill. Certainly been open to conversation, had a lot of conversation with my colleagues, and I hope that they'll give it the thoughtful consideration that the committee did.
All right, Teresa and Mark, thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Keith.
Representative Teresa Peirce is a Democrat from Falmouth who chairs the Joint Select Committee on Marijuana Legalization Implementation. Senator Mark Dion, a Democrat representing District 28. He's also a member of the committee. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. Owen Manahan took your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 7 o'clock. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Monday on the program, Medicare open enrollment answers to your questions. I'm Keith Shortall. Have a good afternoon.